Gatha Nupningna Sutra. The Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
So good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to everyone. Welcome again to Helen. And Nancy, are you like a harbinger of the first frost?
I guess I have been.
Good to see you. Are you in Maine? How long are you in Maine for?
The weekend.
Oh,
I'm gonna go home Monday morning.
Good. When the master was about to die, the head monk asked him, "Your reverence, 100 years from now, where will you be?" "I shall be a water buffalo at the foot of the hill," said the master. "Will it be all right for me to follow you?" asked the head monk. "If you follow me, you must hold a stalk of grass in your mouth," was Pu Yuan's reply. Pu Yuan is Nanchuan Pu Yuan. And this encounter appears in the Entangling Vines, or the Shumon Katoshu, in a biographical sketch on Nanchuan. I find the monk's question rather curious. Why is he asking the master, where will he be 100 years after his death? Perhaps it is just what it appears to be. He simply wants to learn what the master believes will happen after death. Nanchuan's response is even more curious. "I shall be a water buffalo at the foot of the hill." Is he answering the monk's question as to where he will be long after his death? The water buffalo actually appears in another dialogue involving Nanchuan, this time with his student Chaozhou. One of the really sort of interesting things is that I made this comment to Steph in an email yesterday. There are probably more, Nanchuan and Chaozhou probably account for more koans than any other teacher and student in the history of our practice. And this particular one is in the collection known as the Transmission of the Lamp, which are encounters between teacher and student where the student's enlightenment is acknowledged and the Dharma is transmitted. One day, Chaozhou asked, "Where should he take rest who knows that he has it?" Nanchuan replied, "He should become a buffalo at the foot of the mountain." Chaozhou thanked him for his instruction, and Nanchuan remarked, "In the middle of last night, the moon appeared in the window." Clearly, Nanchuan has a deep appreciation for water buffalo. "He should become a buffalo at the foot of the mountain. I shall be a water buffalo at the foot of the hill." Why water buffalo? I don't know a lot about water buffalo beyond what I have seen in the images of South Asia, the buffalo standing immersed in a river or rice paddy, calmly inhaling aquatic plants. I wonder if Nanchuan lived here in Maine, if instead of a buffalo, he would be talking about a moose. A passerby in a cool northern barque is startled momentarily as a great head rises from the water. Water pours from the jowls, the mouth full of green matter extracted from below the surface. It turns slowly and glances at the foreign shape gliding by. Then, convinced that it is no threat, it resumes slowly masticating of its meal, huge and majestic, yet deliberate and calm. What is the great moose reflecting on as it stands there? Does it ponder some great existential dilemma? Why am I here? What is the meaning of life? Does it dwell on its impermanence, wondering how long it will live or how it will die? Does it even reflect on this encounter with this strange being floating by? When it wakened this morning, did the moose think to itself, I screw everything up. I'm a lousy moose. Or my belly is getting too large. Maybe I should cut back on the duckweed. Is this a moose aware of any moment other than this one as it wades along the bog's edge in search of its next mouthful? Does it have an agenda for today which demands that it hurry up and move along? Or does it simply chew, perhaps enjoying the taste of its meal and the growing fullness in its belly and nothing more? If the moose could respond to these questions, would its answer be, when I eat, I eat. When I sleep, I sleep. Like the water buffalo, this moose is often found at the foot of the mountain. It does not dwell on the heights, although it sometimes visits there. It does not remain stuck in a view of the endless expanse of sky and the vast landscape unfolding below. It returns to the bog each day at dawn and dusk, attending to the simple, repetitive task of replenishing itself, harboring no pretensions, no illusion of grandeur. This, then, is moose mind. In this mind of moose, there is no separation. The moose, the water, the plants, the surrounding hills, there is no distinction. The young moose is threatened, the mother moose responds. The threat and response are inseparable, not one, not two. Where should he take rest who knows he has it? He should become a moose at the foot of the mountain. How do we humans find this moose mind? After all, our lives are so complex. We have so very many thoughts arising in endless succession. Should we forsake our lives, our families, our jobs, our comfortable homes, and go off into the mountains to live a life of utter simplicity that would make Thoreau's life on Walden Pond look opulent by comparison? Even if we did that, we could not shed our nature as thinking beings. That's what it means to be human. And we are all terminally human. We don't need to go away, abandoning our lives to see what Nanchuan saw. What we need to do is release our attachment to holding ourselves apart, separate. We need to immerse ourselves deeply in our lives. We need to be intimate in all of our relationships, with our families, our work, and with the world. In those relationships, we need to take very good care of everything we encounter. We must treat it all like it is replaceable, irreplaceable, for in truth it is. Then, like the mother moose responding to defend her young, we simply respond from that place of deep connection, of non-separation. There is no thought of how will this action affect me? Will I gain from this? Will this person like me if I do this? Oh my God, what do they expect of me? How can I endure this any longer? Those bastards, they don't care about me. This understanding of Nanchuan's is further revealed in yet another koan. Nanchuan said to the assembly, the Buddhas of past, present, and future do not know. It is. Cats and cows know it is. Wansong gives us a wonderful introduction to this koan. Becoming a Buddha and being a patriarch is disliked for wearing a defiled name. wearing horns and fur, is pushed to the superior position. This is why the true light doesn't shine. Great wisdom appears foolish. There is yet another who is deaf for convenience and who pretends not to be skillful. Do we know who he is? So cats, cows, buffalo, even moose, and of course dogs know it is, while the Buddhas of past, present, and future do not. That is because they are just cats, cows, buffalo, moose, and dogs, nothing more. They are not Zen students, or even worse, Zen teachers. They are not spiritual persons. They do not live by the precepts. They are not Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. Here at Treetop in 2009, we have 4 teachers and 3 frauds.
4 teachers and 3 frauds.
If, like Nanchuan's disciple, you want to follow those who know that it is, I think he would warn you that you should be prepared to spit up a hairball or two. Now to the matter of Nanchuan's death. At daybreak, on the morning of the 27th of January, 835, the master said to his disciples, "The star has been fading and the lamp growing dim for a long time. Do not say that I came or went." His words ceased and he passed away. He was in his 87th year. From the perspective of the mind that Nanchuan is pointing to in these koans, there is no one, no thing that lives or dies. Nanchuan did not come or go. In his life, the water buffalo stood grazing at the foot of the mountain. After his death, the water buffalo stood grazing at the foot of the mountain. So please feel free to make any comments or corrections, or if you simply wish to add to the confusion, that would be fine too.
It makes me think that we try much too hard to be students. I mean, part of what you were talking about is the being, and we work. Probably 90% of our work is counterproductive. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And yet?
Yeah. If you hadn't done all that work on your house, would it be falling down around your ears?
It would be pretty leaky.
I hear what you're saying, though. I feel that. I'm reading Milarepa, the 100,000 songs of Milarepa, and that's hardly an exaggeration. That's one of the things he says. And just one of the things he said in what I read today was, you know, if you try to do too many things in pursuit of virtue, you lose virtue. And, you know, don't get caught up in your place in line or becoming a student student or a scholar or any damn thing. He says that, although his own striving is totally off the charts. I mean, this guy just, he is gonzo as much as anybody you've ever seen. But in his own psychic economy, it all makes that sense. He says, you know, don't, he's not striving. It's one of the things that when we see him striving, he feels it's doing, not doing. He's just trying to graze there.
So is striving and not striving the same coin, just different sides?
That's a good question.
Well, we could be characterizing him as striving when, in fact, he's not.
Yeah, for him it's just fulfilling his moose nature. He likes to sit. He's talking to these nuns, and the nuns say, "Oh, you know, would you come to the village?" And he said, "You know, I think I'm helping people by sitting." And of course, he gets tons of visitors too. But I don't know. It's a big paradox. If you're labeling it, I think that's part of what Peter was saying. I sort of feel like the proper response to that is, you know, we should put our heads down and graze off the carpet.
For him, 100,000 songs may be like eating 100,000 water lilies. Maybe they just come out of his mouth and he's not striving for them. That's his gift, that's his moose nature, to create a song every morning when he wakes up.
Yeah, I definitely
and
feel that.
For us, it looks like a lot of work, like, because we couldn't imagine getting up every day and coming out with a perfect little song, but for him, maybe it's just like pooping. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Rumi, I think, made 10,000 poems. you know, sometimes, you know, 10, 15 a day. He wasn't worried about them being poems.
Exactly. They were just his ecstatic nature coming forth.
One thing I know about water buffalo is they're extremely gentle creatures, and small children can lead them to in plowing. They're very necessary to the cultures, the rice growing cultures. When I read about water buffalo, which I read about in the Heifer Projects literature, I was just so moved with these enormous animals and how gentle they are and how willing to do they are.
I wonder if they started out that way, or if they're being an honored part of the culture, they became these gentle giants.
In order for Zen to work, all the Zen masters say aspiration is necessary. Without aspiration, without wanting it, it won't happen. That's the difference between striving and aspiration.
Well, I asked you one time in Daisan, I said, well, isn't the desire for enlightenment alone a craving to be defeated? And you said, don't think of it as desire, it's aspiration.
Right.
I still remember
I was
that.
Right.
And he's still right.
He's still right.
Phew.
And so, it doesn't mean becoming a water buffalo, it means becoming Joe. Becoming Nancy. becoming who you are without thought. It doesn't mean not working. It means working, but without thought of working. This is what I do. I teach. I write poems. I screw up. It means being who you are as you are. And Shakyamuni says, and as you are, you're enlightened. It all fits together. But you need to want it. If you don't want it, you're going to be a dead fly. If I were Nam Chuan and a student said to me, what are you going to do when you die? I say, I'll be a buffalo. Well, can I follow you? Yes, but you better carry a shovel.
That's why we need American koans. We haven't gotten the Blue Cliff record for America yet.
Well, I think they will come,
yeah.
But maybe in 500-600 years, and we have time.
And yet those sometimes so seeming abstruse koans that come out of medieval China are so relevant to who we are today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
The culture may be different, the time may be different, but people are still the same, I think. They're still relevant to us.
And yet, if you use the koan and make it yours, otherwise, Bankei says, you are washing in somebody else's urine.
Mm-hmm.
Make it yours. Don't just mouth it, just repeat it. Don't parrot it. It's got to become yours. That's why three different people will have the same koan, and they could be three different answers, and they all could be correct. They could all be approved by the teacher.
Or none of them.
Or none of them. Or they all can have the same answer, and the teacher will approve one and not the others.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not theirs. And what we look for is this you speaking? Or are you parroting? Are you becoming a student?
So, Helen, tell us about yourself. You clearly have sat somewhere before.
I have. Periodically, not as often as I would like to, which is why I'm looking for someplace close to home rather than going out to the West Coast, which is where the teacher that I study with was at the time. She's not here on the East Coast.
Who is that teacher?
Sensei Riamon Hilda Gerteren Baldwin. She's of African Cuban ancestry.
Uh-huh.
Started out in the San Francisco area. And just received a transmission. Her teacher was is it Blanche Hartman?
Oh, Blanche.
Oh,
yeah, we know Blanche.
Yeah, that's her. That's
Blanche is the mother hen of Buddhism.
I had an opportunity to meet her last year, actually. So mostly I sit alone at home by myself,
mm-hmm.
and from what I've gathered from retreats, I've been on several silent retreats and been to different centers, Shambhala, IMS, but I really would like to, although Sensei Rumo says it doesn't really matter where you sit so long as you have your own sense of what your practices, you can sit in other lineages and other practices. But I would like to, my desire as when I sat before you this morning was to pay attention. And for me, paying attention is learning more, just being more aware of this particular lineage.
trying to find some place closer to home.
Well, you're certainly welcome here.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Where's home?
Washington, Maine. Just on the other side of Windsor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not very far at all.
No, no. Now that I know, it took about an hour to get here this morning, but I'm sure it won't. It's probably closer to 45 minutes.
There's no direct route, I don't think, between there and here.
Well, if I take the same one, it won't probably take as long.
Yeah.
It's the old Pepperidge Farm commercial. You can't get there from here.
Yeah. You can go this way, and you still get there.
I think what's and just responding a little bit to, I don't know everybody's name, you're being a teacher, you know, working so hard to do, to find, to be, and maybe it's not so much out there, but and maybe you touched that a little bit on, it's in with what's in with within you. And I find myself trying to, you know, be external, and my part of my practice is to be more internal. So I think what we all have, what we need within us, if we pay attention to it.
Yeah. Well, this is Deborah. This is Kyle. Peter, you know. I'm Margaret. Steph. Peter. It, for a while, half the song was Peter, but Joe.
Nancy.
And Mary.
I was thinking about changing my name to Peter, too, but it's a new goal to confuse things.
I'll swap with you.
Actually.
This is a fairly small group for us. We normally have
it's because of the fair.
Common Ground Fairs this weekend, and some people are committed to going to that.
And several people from our Sangha live in Unity, and if you live in Unity, you don't want to go anywhere the Common Ground Fair doesn't.
We're very glad you could join us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Next Saturday is another work day. There's regular sitting, but I think they're wanting to finish the sheds finally.
Yeah. We are going to be working on them today.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to stay and help, we can find work for you. But don't, no pressure.
Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it.
Oh, Helen, if you would like to be on our email list, there's a little form I think it's on top of the donation box. Just fill it in, and you will get emails from us. It's occasional emails, I think. I don't think it's a flood.
And also, Kyle is going to show you the Oreo key after we get done.
Oh, great. Did you send me an email this weekend for a description for the deep ecology?
I did not.
Okay. Peter, did you send me an email?
Not that I was conscious of.
I need those before I complete the
script. I got yours, Peter. Did you get mine?
Yeah, we need the descriptions on the poetry workshops and dates for those, too.
I got the dates. I gave you the dates.
You got those?
I just need the brief description for the schedule. And I thought you might have ended up in the bit bucket. That's why I asked. The spam bucket.
Sometimes people get sorted out.